the ambassador of Spain to Israel, the ambassador of Israel to Spain, the heads of the Jewish community here, my sisters, my brothers, I bring you love from Zion and greetings from Israel. I was delighted to see the two young, the boy and the girl, singing and speaking in Hebrew. You know, we Jewish people, we know the answers to all questions, but we don't know the answer to one question. Who is a Jew? And the answer to this question is, today a Jew, the Jewish family, are the ones who try to keep their boys and girls remaining Jewish. This is the great message I got when I listened to the remarks and the song by the young people. Thank you very much. I'm coming to Spain on the celebration of the 25th anniversary of the agreement between Spain and Israel to reestablish our relations. Israel was established 63 years ago, and our relations were renewed only 25 years ago. We knew in Spain the heights of enlightenment and the sorrow of expulsions. For 400 years, there was a divorce between our two peoples, the expulsion of the Jewish people. For 400 years, there wasn't a single Jewish person in Spain. We became strangers and separated. But we also knew the height of the Golden Age. For 200 years, Spain was an example of coexistence and creativity between Jews and Christians and Muslims, between Spaniards, Jews and Arabs. It was an unforgettable age, full of spirit, the height of culture, the model of understanding. So in between this peak of the Golden Age and the down of the expulsion of Jewish life, the relations between our two countries were wavering in a stormy history. You know, we established our relations not in Madrid and not in Jerusalem. It was too early in the taste of some people. So Felipe Gonzalez and myself met in Hague, in Holland. I believe that then we were much younger than today, both he and me, more excited, more hopeful, but I think we did really the right thing. You know, we the Jewish people have reason to be angry and angry with many nations. We suffered so much from anti-Semitism, from the Inquisition, from hatred, and the unforgettable Shoah. But the strength of our people is not just to remember our past and difficulties, but never to forget the future. We don't look upon Spain just with the glasses of yesterday, but also with the eyes of a new Spain. A Spain that tastes democracy and freedom and modernity. A Spain that we can have a dialogue with a full and open heart. For us, the 63 years of independence were not a simple proposition. In the 63 years, we have had to go through 7 wars, 2 intifadas, ongoing terror, boycott, hatred, accusations. And I shall never forget the first day of our independence. We have had little reason to believe that we can overcome the disproportion between the one that attacked us and ourselves to defend ourselves. At that time, the Arabs were 80 times stronger in numbers. There were 650,000 Jewish people. There were 40 million Arab people. They had 7 armies. We didn't have an army at all. On the morrow of the United Nations resolution, we accepted the terrible map offered to us. The Arab refused and attacked us before we had an army, before we had a state. They have had 7 armies. We didn't. They have planes and tanks. We hardly have had rifles and machine guns. Proportionally, we're supposed to lose. And the people, including the ones who voted for the establishment of the Jewish state, refused to give us rifles to defend our lives. We are alone, isolated, disproportionate. I was then on the side of Ben Gurion, the founder of our country. I shall never forget the night of the Declaration of the United Nations. I shall never forget the day of our independence, first independence. On the night of the resolution of the United Nations, the streets were full with dancers, happy people, singing, laughing, hopping. I was standing next to Ben Gurion. He was the only sad person in Israel. He said, "Today they are dancing, tomorrow there will be bloodshed." And in the morning, we got our first 6 people killed. For no reason. Then I remember the day of independence, when we stood up and declared the independence of the State of Israel in a very great controversy. In the government itself, 6 members were for this independence and 5 were against. There was a majority of 1. We got warnings from the United States, "Don't do it." And on that day, which is supposed to be a very happy day, I again knew how Ben Gurion felt, because the day before the day of independence, the Arab conquered the Etzion group of settlements. 240 people were killed a day before the independence. The rest were taken in prison. And then if you say, how can you declare it? He stood up, nobody felt that such a tragedy happened the day before. Then we won the war at a heavy cost. We lost some of our best people we have had. The most brave and young. We have nothing else but the courage and the sacrifice of the people. Then in the following years, again a war and again a war and again a war. We never asked the Americans or the Spanish people to send soldiers to defend us. We did it ourselves. And we didn't have the privilege to lose one war or to make one mistake. Would we lose one war, we may have lost our people. So we have the right to be hopeful, and we are. In spite of the wars, and in spite of the attacks, we never gave up democracy. We never gave up our hope for peace. You know, the irony of history is very strong. A couple of weeks ago, Colonel Gaddafi made a speech, and he says that he tries to have a Middle East without Israel. Today, apparently, there will be a Libya without Gaddafi. He cared so much about Israel, and he forgot to care for his own people. Now his own people told him, "Gentlemen, how about us?" And that's the way about all other tyrants. What's happening in the Arab world is done by the Arabs themselves. A young generation woke up and say, "My God, where are we going?" Nobody organized them, neither a religion, not an army, not a party. We don't know who organized them at all. It was spontaneous rather than organized. It arrived in a sudden. What made them revolt? Simply an occasion to see things as they are. The internet, the computers, the Facebooks, all of a sudden show them on their own screens what is poverty, what is corruption, what is lack of freedom, what is waste of life. And they say, "No more. Israel was born a democracy. It never gave up a day of democracy because of a day of war. And our greatest hope that all people in the Middle East will become Democrats, not to waste our energy for killing, for fighting, for dominating, but let's our young people to build a future of freedom, of honesty, of hope." The hope of the young generation of the Arab people is the hope of Israel. We hope both for a democratic Middle East and for a peaceful Middle East. There is no contradiction between the two. Nothing assures democracy more than peace. Nothing assures peace more than democracy. We are praying for freedom. We are praying for peace. We are praying that all mothers can have a full night of uninterrupted sleep. All mothers, all children. We never were born to make wars. We never were born to dominate other people. What typifies Jewish history and Jewish priority is the moral call. There is no Judaism without the Ten Commandments. It is our Torah that holds us together, not our rifles. Our rifles hold us to remain alive. Our Torah gave us a meaning to our life, to this very day. The Ten Commandments are only 172 words, the shortest document in history and the most brilliant document in history. It exists for 3,500 years without changing a word, and it was adopted not only by the Jews, by the Western civilization as well. We would be lost if we wouldn't have our Torah, and we wouldn't have a future without returning to our land. We came to a land that was a desert. We came back not only to our land, but also to our culture, to our language. Israel at the beginning was a country where the children taught their mothers their mother tongue, how to speak Hebrew. And, you know, in 63 years, fighting, being alone, isolated, he never stopped building and hoping. Today Israel is almost an economic miracle. We didn't have land, and we don't have land. We didn't have water, and we don't have water. Thanks heaven, we didn't have oil, so we couldn't be lazy. We didn't have oil. We were the only holy country among oily countries. And believe me, being holy is a good business. We have shown it. Without having land and without having water, we created one of the best agriculture on earth. You know, Russia is 1,000 times the size of Israel. Russia is like 1,000 Israels. Russia has 1,000 lakes of sweet water. We have 2 lakes, one dead, the other dying. And yet, we export carrots to Moscow, avocado to Paris, and flowers to London. It is not the land, it is the people. And what we can do, I believe other peoples can do as well. I'm not sure that the Chinese know very much who was Moses or who was Abraham. I think that they think that the Jewish people were fathered by 3 great giants, which are Albert Einstein, Karl Marx, Sigmund Freud, maybe Kissinger as well, I don't know. Yet, what they do know is the Israeli agriculture, this small piece of land offered to China, a modern agriculture, to China, to India, and we shall gladly do it to our Arab neighbors. We want to share with them. In our eyes, the better the Arabs will have it. It will be better for us. It will be better for Israel as well. We don't look for revenge. We don't look for winning or gaining. I think the greatest victory we can achieve is peace. And that remains our aim. I know that we are being criticized. Okay. I know people are trying to delegitimate Israel. The ones who are delegitimating Israel are legitimating whom? Ahmadinejad? Hezbollah? Hamas? Who is the alternative? Should Israel stop fighting for her life? But we shall overcome Ahmadinejad, and we shall overcome Nasrallah. Not us will do it. Not we shall do it. Their own people will do it. What is the promise of Ahmadinejad to the Iranian people? Enriched uranium? Terror? War? Hatred? Domination? And he will be condemned by the Persian culture and the Iranian people. Because he may have bombs, but he doesn't have a message of hope, neither for their people nor for other people. He's a problem and a menace to the whole world, because terror is global. Terror can move to every place, from Madrid to Chechnya, from Afghanistan to Berlin. It's not an Israeli monopoly. It's a danger to the whole world. And again, the head of Hezbollah, who is carrying a religious mantle. What does he suggest? That Lebanon will become again a battlefield to destroy his people? What for? We are not the enemies of Lebanon. We don't have any ambitions in Lebanon. You know, the Arabs never enabled the Palestinians to have a state of their own. The West Bank was under the control of Jordan. It was never given to the Palestinians. The Gaza Strip was controlled by the Egyptians. It never went over to the Palestinians. As a matter of fact, there was never a Palestinian state in history. We recognized the Palestinian people. We recognize the right of the Palestinians to have a state of their own. We said we are ready to give back land, as we gave back land and water to Egypt and Jordan, once we had peace. We started to give back land to the Palestinians as well. On our own initiatives, we left Gaza completely. It took us to mobilize 75,000 policemen to call back our settlers from Gaza. We had had to pay $2.5 billion compensation. Alas, once we left Gaza, Hamas overtook Gaza. They killed the leaders of the Fatah and they started to shoot at us. Why? What for? What were the reasons? What were the targets? If Hamas will continue to shoot, they will continue to be the greatest danger to Gaza. If they will stop, Gaza will enjoy the same opportunity as the West Bank. In the West Bank, the Palestinians are now beginning to build their own state. There is a profound change in the economy, 7% of growth, and we shall restart the negotiations to make peace. I'm coming to Spain because the Middle East is part of the Spanish history. The history of Spain is a part of the Middle East. You saw here the heights of promise, the low points of mistakes. But we saw also the conference in Madrid, which was a good beginning. We saw the Barcelona process, which is also a good indication. And I'm coming here not to revive old memories, which are painful, but to explain to everybody that we look for friendship, for peace, for democracy. That what is happening now in the Middle East is hopeful. And I have a hope that the hands of the moderate, of the young people, of democracy, will win the day. Not all tyrants and dictators, not the known corruption and the lack of taste for the faith of their own people. I'm coming here, I know the Jewish community here is not the largest in the world, but that you have 300 children in schools, in Hebrew schools, is a great thing in my eyes. I'm coming here with hope and love and a prayer for democracy and peace in the Middle East, among all nations, for the sake of all mothers, for the future of all children. And I believe we shall win, not because we are rich and strong, because we are right and hopeful. Thank you very much.
Con un personaje como Shimon Peres, el noveno presidente, seguramente va a haber muchos actos, porque es una persona que tiene 90 años y en esos 90 años alcanzó a hacer tantas cosas que es difícil pensar que en 90 años se pueden hacer tantas cosas, ¿no? Porque es un personaje realmente llamativo.
Sí, sin ninguna duda. Bueno, desde luego aquí en Radio Sefaraz, gente mucho más cualificada que yo glosará la trayectoria del presidente, ya expresidente Peres, y tendrá mucha más información y sabrá defender su figura mucho mejor que de lo que lo puedo hacer yo, pero yo desde luego sí me gustaría aportar mi pequeño granito de arena. Celebro que me deis la oportunidad de inaugurar la ronda de felicitaciones y reacciones al fin de la presidencia del señor Peres. Pero por supuesto en ACOM queríamos también eso, aportar nuestro pequeño granito de arena de homenaje, ¿no?, a esta figura tan sumamente fascinante y de la que parece que, bueno, parece no, o sea, pertenece a otra era, a otra época y cuesta encontrar gente, no sé, de estas características hoy en día, ¿no? La verdad es que la biografía y la trayectoria política de Pérez es absolutamente, como has dicho, bueno, no sé si se pueden ser más cosas, ¿no? Ha sido 2 veces primer ministro, ha recibido el Premio Nobel de la Paz en el 94 tras negociaciones de Oslo, ¿no?
Con
Rabin y Arafat, que seguro que el último se lo merecía mucho más. Ha sido 3 veces ministro de Exteriores y, bueno, lleva siendo presidente desde 2007. No sé, creo que ha habido muy pocos cargos que no haya desempeñado. Su figura siempre, su carrera política siempre ha estado ligada al Ministerio de Defensa, ¿no? A la SIDF, que, bueno, de hecho fue él el mayor... Perdona, ¿qué ibas
a decir? No, iba a decir algo, un dato que quizás a mucha gente no le signifique mucho, pero para Israel es tremendamente significativo. Fue primer ministro 2 veces, presidente y todo lo que dices, sin haber hecho el ejército. Cosa que en Israel es casi inconcebible, pero resulta que cuando él era jovencito y le tocaba hacer el ejército, era muy jovencito, Ben Gurión lo reclutó justamente para unos trabajos que eran en vista de la futura independencia, conseguir armas en Europa, porque no era un estado todavía, nadie le vendía armas, se acababa la Segunda Guerra Mundial, no había quien comprarle armas. Israel no tenía dinero para comprar armas, pero tenían a los ejércitos árabes apuntándoles a la cabeza, y de alguna manera, y este chico, que entonces tenía apenas 20, 20 y pocos años, pues fue el que armó al Tzahal en los primeros meses de existencia, hasta que cuando todavía ni siquiera recibía el nombre de Ejército de Defensa de Israel y que todavía se estaba armando. O sea que él tuvo esa trayectoria al margen, siempre ligada al Ministerio de Defensa muchas veces, pero como un pacifista dentro de los ejércitos.
Sí, sí. Bueno, no sé, a lo mejor podríamos considerar su militancia en la Haganá como un servicio militar, ¿no? Aunque efectivamente no.
Sí, bueno, era un poco más irregular y en realidad él siempre fue el intelectual. Incluso yo creo que mucha gente en Israel, entre comillas, no le perdona que haya sido tan intelectual, porque él era poeta, él era escritor, es... bueno, hace mucho que no ejerce en esas tareas intelectuales, pero esa era su vocación y pues los destinos del país lo llevaron por otros rumbos, pero él siempre fue el que emitía esas frases que ilusionaban a la gente, etcétera. Pero por otra parte, nunca llegó a tener el carisma de otros dirigentes que estaban a su lado. Por ejemplo, cuando asesinaron a Rabin, él ocupó el cargo en vez de Rabin y en menos de un año pues la gente no lo reeligió.
Es verdad, eso también ha sido curioso, ¿no? Sus muchas derrotas políticas, siempre ha estado ahí, ha estado pues qué, 50 años en la Knesset o una cosa así, pero efectivamente sí ha perdido las elecciones en varias ocasiones. Y es cierto, es una figura, lo que dices es verdad, Jorge, ¿no? Es una figura que en Israel no sé, los políticos que se revisten de carisma, Pérez, como es una figura como más tranquila, ¿no? Más intelectual, como has dicho.
Como no era militar, él no era general, no era ni Moshe Dayan, ni Ezer Weitzman, ni siquiera alguien como un líder de la clandestinidad, como lo fue Menachem Begin o Yitzhak Shamir, o Netanyahu, que aunque tampoco actuaba en el círculo estrictamente militar, pero sí que era un hombre acostumbrado a mandar.
Sí.
En cambio, Pérez no pertenecía al círculo de los que mandan.
Sí, sí, sí. No, y además los perfiles que has nombrado, muchos de ellos cumplen unas características, son el divismo que tenía Moshe Dayan, y lo digo sin...
Sí, sí.
No lo digo como una crítica, yo soy un gran admirador de Moshe Dayan, que duda cabe, o esa rudeza que pueden exhibir otros líderes, ¿no? Netanyahu, Sharon, esa fuerza... Y Pérez, claro, era un talante muy, muy... Muy diferente, sí. Siempre se le tuvo por una paloma, ¿no? Dentro del ejército, dirigió la retirada del Sinaí o ordenó la retirada del Líbano. Pero bueno, al mismo tiempo tampoco le temblaba la mano cuando sí había que bombardear las posiciones de la OLP en el Líbano, cosa por la que fue muy criticada en su momento por algunos sectores. Y si no, corrígeme si me equivoco, pero creo que fue también el que dirigió el rescate en Uganda, ¿no?
En el que falleció
Johnny Netanyahu.
Fue en el 76, yo creo que era Golda Meir en esa época. Y si estaba por ahí Golda, pues no creo que Pérez se atreviera a mandar nada.
Seguro, pero todo eso es un error mío. Yo pensé que él había dirigido el rescate Idi Amin.
Puede ser. Yo aquí no tengo la enciclopedia a mano para consultarlo, pero si no fue ese operativo, seguramente algún otro operativo durante su época de gobierno seguro que se desarrolló. Pero él también desarrolló a la vez muchos operativos secretos de diálogo. Uh-huh. O sea, ahora sí. Acaban de fracasar las conversaciones de paz y acaba de venir de este rezo con Mahmoud Abbas en el Vaticano y que esto que lo otro. Pero él ha estado en contacto con Sadat, con el rey Hussein de Jordania para los tratados de paz. Ha estado siempre detrás de las negociaciones que al final brillaban con luz ajena o alguien se llevaba el mérito, pero esos contactos internacionales muchas veces eran cosa suya y es una figura muy respetada, por ejemplo, dentro del ámbito de las organizaciones europeas del Partido Socialista Europeo y de la Internacional Socialista, a pesar de que hace unos años él se salió del Partido Laborista.
Sí, es curiosa también su trayectoria política en ese sentido, ¿no? Ha militado en varios partidos, ¿no? Ha estado en Kadima, eso. Del Partido Laborista, yo es que creo que incluso fue durante un tiempo presidente de la Internacional Socialista. Uh-huh. A pesar de que recuerdo una de las delegaciones socialistas que llevé a Israel cuando yo era gerente de ASEI, y me acuerdo que la persona que encabezaba esa delegación le echó en cara a Simón Pérez, aunque hacía ya siglos que no era presidente de la Internacional Socialista, le echó en cara que el Partido Laborista Israelí llevaba tiempo sin pagar las cuotas. Lo primero que le dijeron.
No sé si está dentro de las 15 categorías que Kotler considera antisemitismo.
Pues yo creo que sí, que en un epígrafe de esos la podíamos incluir. La verdad es que es una persona con una presencia pública tan profusa que incluso yo en mi poca relación con Israel, mis pocos viajes que he tenido allí mi poca relación con las altas instancias políticas israelíes, he coincidido con él en algún acto. Uh-huh. Y resulta verdaderamente, a mí me fascina como persona. Porque en estos tiempos en los que vivimos, ¿no? que la gente cuando viene de vacaciones necesita ir al psiquiatra porque se deprimen o se ahorcan, y este tipo de cosas que suceden desde que la gente nos empezamos a preguntar cuál era el sentido de la vida y a ponernos a llorar por cualquier gilipollez, tú te encuentras eso, una persona de 91 años cuya familia, parte de su familia, pues fue exterminada por los nazis de la manera más cruel, que ha tenido que llegó a un país que se estaba levantando de la nada, eso, de adolescente, militando en la Haganah, que ha participado, pues sin hacer la mili, pero sí, en la Guerra de la Independencia, como bien dijiste, dirigió la delegación del Ministerio de Defensa, que se dedicaba a reclutar a conseguir armas para la contienda, dirigió el servicio naval. Una persona que se ha enfrentado a un millón de vicisitudes y problemas. Sin embargo, le ves ahí con unos 91 años que resultan increíbles, ¿no? O sea, porque tiene un aspecto físico fascinante, le ves subir unas escaleras o hablar o lo que sea y la verdad es que no solo no parece que tenga su edad, sino que parece increíble que conserve esa ilusión y ese optimismo, ¿no? Ese optimismo que a mí a veces me parece ingenuo, pero que probablemente sea lo que le ha llevado eso, a cumplir los 91 años sirviendo al pueblo y al Estado de Israel fielmente hasta el final y me imagino que seguirá haciéndolo ahora, aunque deje de ser presidente, y con esa salud tan envidiable, ¿no? Cuando otras personas, como que comentábamos, que mostraban una fachada mucho más ruda y fiera y fuerza y fuerte, pues no han llegado tan lejos como él y desde luego no tan bien.
חברים שקועים עוד בחלומות וכבר הופעת שלווה כשילוח נתח מלואה פרוסה של גדולך היא שומעת דוברת ימה תמימה עתיקה וזוהרת מפילוג עבר בוקע בקור לחן עתיק מזמור כחול חיתך לסף לגלי הרים וחוכמת יופייך ערך ואוהבים שהקדימו נסחפו ברשת קסמייך קסמייך שהשכימו החופים מנגד הוצאו מתומר ובאלומות השתחפו שיבולים מקים דוברת ימה תמימה עתיקה וזוהרת